We've been talking about the tremendous blessing that we as Christians enjoy because we've been called to freedom. We don't have to live in constant awareness of this broken world that we unfortunately have to inhabit. We're going to interact with people who still have to deal with the kinds of things that they learned as coping mechanisms to let them deal with this ugly, broken world. They don't know God, and because they don't know Jesus, they don't have the access to the wonderful blessings that we have as Christians. So this morning, we're going to continue our discussion about freed people, and we're going to focus on how freed people are freed so that they can bear one another's burdens. That's not something that you see very often in the world around us. When you talk about the let me get rid of that real quickly. Thank you. You don't see that very often in the world around us. In fact, when you talk about the relationship that two people might have when one of them is involved in something that hurts other people, you generally speak in terms of Matthew, the seventh chapter. Jesus reminds us that if you're going to correct something that somebody else is doing, the first thing you have to do is consider yourself. He says it this way. He says, why are you concerned with the mote that's in your brother's eye when you ought to be more concerned about the beam that's in your own eye? And we reflexively think about those kinds of things when we think about helping somebody else. We always think about the fact that we're sinners and we have as many problems as anybody else does. Now, in a perverse kind of way, some people twist that and say, well, I've gotten rid of the sin and the awful things that were in my life, so now I can shame you. You who still practice those things that I used to practice. That's a twisting of everything that Jesus taught. And we're gonna try to understand a little bit more about bearing each other's burdens. And this time, we're going to talk a little bit about the goal of bearing someone's burdens. So we'll go back to Galatians, the fifth chapter, and we'll start at verse 25. Here the apostle says, if we live by the Spirit, let's follow the Spirit as well. Let's not become boastful, challenging one another. There's that twisted kind of approach, envying one another. Brothers and sisters, even if a person is caught in any wrongdoing, you who are spiritual are to restore such a person in the spirit of gentleness, each one looking to yourself. And when we think about that passage, we sometimes revert to the twisted view. He says, looking to yourself so that you're not tempted as well. Bear one another's burdens, thereby fulfill the law of Christ. If anyone thinks that he's something when he's nothing, he deceives himself. Twisted thinking again. He says, each one must examine his own work, and then he'll have reason for boasting, but to himself alone and never to another. Each one will bear his own load. So let's think about what it means to talk about someone who's overtaken in a fault. Now, I put that picture up there of a kid that was overtaken in a fault. He's got his hand in the candy jar. And his mom walked in, and his mom doesn't even have to say anything. Immediately, his heart starts to race. He jumps back. He jumps back so quickly that he almost pulls the candy jar off the counter. And every one of us can remember that kind of thing. Now, that's what the apostle is talking about when he talks about being overtaken. Now, we sometimes miss this because we have a tendency to think that we understand what the word overtaken refers to. Well, it's this old Greek word. It's number 4301 in Strong's numbering system. And it's used in a number of different places in the New Testament. In the King James translation, it's translated, given the words that I have up here for you. But it's used three times in the Greek manuscripts. In Mark, the 14th chapter, and at verse 8, it's used, and this is the way it reads in verse 8. Well, we're going to start in verse 3, but this is the way it reads in verse 8. Being in Bethany in the house of Simon the leper, of course that's Jesus, he's gone to Simon's house, he sat at meat. There came a woman having an alabaster box of ointment of spikenard, very precious. She broke the box, poured it on his head. There were some that had indignation within themselves and said, why was this waste of ointment made? It might have been sold for more than 300 pence and given to the poor. They murmured against her. That's a story that we're all familiar with, right? Jesus said, let her alone. Why trouble you her? She hath brought a good work upon me. You have the poor with you always, and whatsoever you will, you may, and whensoever you will, you may do them good. But me you have not always. She has done what she could. She's come aforehand. That's the word overtaken. Just kind of fix that in your mind. Her purpose was to anoint his body to the burying. Verily I say unto you, wherever this gospel is preached throughout the whole world, this also that she has done shall be spoken of as a memorial to her. So she was overtaking something. She was doing what someone else is doing when we see them involved in sin. 1 Corinthians, the 11th chapter, is the next place that it's used. And again, it's a bit surprising because it's not the way that we think of being overtaken. 1 Corinthians 11, we're going to begin at about verse 17 to set the stage. It's used when we get down to verse 21. He says, now in this that I declare unto you, I praise you not. Of course, again, passage that we're terribly familiar with. He says, you come together not for the better, but for the worse. For first of all, when you come together in the church, I hear that there be divisions among you. I partly believe it. There must also be heresies among you, that they which are approved may be made manifest among you. When you come together, therefore, into one place, this is not to eat the Lord's Supper. They were going through some motions that kind of looked like the Lord's Supper. They said it was the Lord's Supper, but the Apostle Paul says, this is not what you're doing. What they were doing was, in eating, everyone taketh before another his own supper. One is hungry and another is drunken. That's the word. Taketh before. That's overtaking. It's the same word that's used here in Galatians, the 6th chapter, at verse 1. When we read that passage and we think about encountering someone who's overtaken in a fault, we have a tendency to think, well, that's somebody that was unexpectedly set upon by lust and he gave in. That's not it. Thayer defines it this way. He says it's to take before, to anticipate, to forestall, and then this is the part of his definition that I'm most interested in. He says, It's to take one by forestalling him before he can flee. Or before he can commit his crime. It's to be surprised or detected. It's the same thing as being caught red-handed. Now, think about this very carefully. When we catch somebody red-handed, do we think of that as an opportunity to bear their burden? Or do we think of it as an opportunity to expose them? Well, let's go on. Let's think about what it means to be overtaken in a fault. This is from the word that you see up there. I'm not even going to try to pronounce that word. I'm not a Greek scholar. It's according to Strong's number, it's number 3,900. And it's a combination of a couple of words, he says. One is a side slip, a lapse, or a deviation. And then he says, interestingly, it could be unintentional, where a person unintentionally does something that's sin. He didn't set out to do it, but he unintentionally did it. Or, Thayer says, that it could mean a transgression that's willful. Now that's interesting, because when we think, again, of a willful transgression, that's not the kind of thing that we think about needs burden bearing. But the word here will admit of either of those kinds of transgressions. So let's think about what our response is. When we think about the whole goal of burden bearing, this is a word that just is fraught with meaning. And it's the goal of burden bearing is to use this great big word, and this great big word means to restore, to make whole again, to render sound, to repair what is broken. And I have the image up here of a fisherman who's repairing his nets. Now, this is a modern day fisherman. Of course, you can tell that immediately by looking at that image. This is a modern day image of a fisherman repairing his nets. But fishermen have been repairing nets in the same way for millennia. If you were to go to the Middle East today, you would see fishermen sitting on the ground sometimes with a net on their toes. And they would use their toes to kind of spread out the net, and they would mend it. That's the root meaning of this word. Mark, the fourth chapter, and at verse 21. This is a word that's used right there. It's a little easier to understand when we think about it in these terms. Matthew 4, again, beginning at about verse 18, to set the stage for this a little bit, Jesus walking by the Sea of Galilee, he sees two brethren, Simon, who's called Peter, and Andrew, his brother, casting a net into the sea, for they were fishers. And he said to them, "Follow me, I'll make you fishers of men." They straightway left their nets and they followed him. Going on from thence, he saw two other brethren, James the son of Zebedee, John his brother, in a ship with Zebedee their father, and they were mending their nets. They were restoring them. That's the word. They immediately left the ship and their father, and they followed him when he called them. when we see someone caught red-handed in some kind of sin, our purpose is to restore them, not shame them, not expose them. It's to restore them. And it's spiritual people that can do this. It's only people that are called to freedom that can understand what this means. Because if you're not a person who's put on Christ, then your purpose when you catch somebody red-handed is to scream, aha! And to expose them to all the shame that you can expose them to because they've been caught red-handed. Instead, we need to mend that person. So it's just something for us to think about as we think about the tremendous tremendous blessing of being freed people and learning to live like freed people. Learning that we don't have to relate to the people that are around us in the way that non-freed people do. But because we've been freed and we've put on Christ in baptism and the old man is done away and we're new creatures in Christ, this is the way that we get to react to people. You know, if you're not a Christian, this is hard to understand. If you are a Christian, if you're a spiritual person, this is what we do every day. And that's a good thing.